Proctor, how are you?
I'm all right.
Are you?
Yeah.
Kind of cold.
It's kind of cold.
Well, you know, we got a lot to deal with today. I'm going to read this big ad, big ass ad that appeared in the New York Times calling for Bush to step down. I'm going to read that, but I'm going to open with this, and I think this is a very serious thing. Also, I got some stuff about art. I got art stuff. And, of course, I can't help but comment on the Skybus. But I want to open with the serious stuff about Tukey Williams. Actually.
Yeah, that's the dismaying turn of events.
Well,
everybody saw it coming.
Yeah, not surprising.
No.
Arnold the Wuss Schwarzenegger, governor of California.
Yeah.
All right, I had handed to me just this morning as I came in a copy of a declaration by a guy named Gordon Bradbury von Ellerman, who actually suggests that the L.A. Sheriff's Office and others in Los Angeles set up Tukey Williams. And had this guy testify, you know, basically bring him down, because they wanted to get this head of the Crips.
Now, I thought the question was not whether or not Tukey Williams was innocent, but whether or not he should be executed.
Well,
although he never did admit to committing
a crime.
Well,
this is interesting. If I were in his, let me just say, if I were in his situation and I wanted to live,
mm-hmm.
and there was a lot of ifs, but and I wanted to live, all he had to do was say, "Oh, I'm guilty and I'm so sorry," because he already had this real stand-up rep as a hard guy, and the guy who turned around his life and who was doing children's books and who essentially had disavowed his gang lifestyle. If he'd wanted to live, all he'd had to do was to have said he did it, he's sorry, and he can't make it up, but he really is sorry. Okay? That's all he had to do. He refused to do that. He said, "I'm innocent. I didn't do the crime." Okay?
That's true. It would have been really easy for him,
even if he was
innocent, to fib simply to avoid dying.
Absolutely. But he refused to do that.
He refused to stand up for that.
So there are two possibilities in that context. Either he's guilty and just couldn't admit it, or he really was innocent. These documents suggest that he really was set up and didn't do the crimes, despite, you know, the trial and so on. Okay, so that the facts of the case are wrong. Now you have another take on this, though.
Well, I mean that's very significant, I suppose, and very integral to the entire case. The question of his guilt and innocence certainly is, but there's also the dialogue that was happening around whether or not he could be executed or should be executed. That was a dialogue I think most people were focusing on. And it also calls into question ideas such as, you know, can the prison experience be redemptive enough? Let's assume for the moment that he's guilty. It was his redemptive experience significant enough to warrant commutation of his sentence? All questions of whether or not the death penalty should be in place aside, you know, did this man turn his life around?
Did he change?
Did he work to make a positive, change in society at large? And I think the answer is yes.
So, well, I don't know that prison turned him around. I think having a chance to think, I guess prison is the thing, turned him around. I believe that he really did change. I personally believe the capital punishment, I can only imagine a very few instances where it's appropriate. I'm not even sure of those. It seems to me that our judicial system is so filled with politics and corruption that there's never an instance where it's justified. Actually, even if it were okay morally, so I have a great trouble with this whole business.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever an instance in which capital punishment is appropriate. Perhaps in an international tribunal when somebody's on trial for crimes against humanity.
Mean the Hitler model?
Yeah, perhaps in that situation, but for a murder, even a multiple homicide, in a domestic situation like Tukey Williams. I don't think you can justify.
There are these scum people, these animal people that, you know, that kill lots of people and torture them, and you know, I mean, come on.
When we decide to give the state the power to take somebody's life,
yeah,
then by extension, we are all taking that life.
Yeah,
and the blood of that executed person is on the hands of all of us because we are the state.
No, well, unfortunately in America, we aren't the state.
Well,
in theory.
In theory, we are the state.
Yeah, but, you know, come on. I mean, you know, there's some really bad people who, if there were any chance that they would have an opportunity to kill again, they would kill again. It's their impulse. It's their compulsion.
Yeah, perhaps, but is society protected from that impulse by locking someone up for the rest of their life? I think it is.
Yeah, but what about at least cutting a finger off every week or something?
No.
No.
No. No. But this question is a cancer on our on the body politic. It absolutely is. What if we permit the death penalty? We essentially are saying that the bereaved, the loved ones, the family of whoever was killed in this instance, their desire for vengeance essentially trumps that criminal's fundamental right to life. We're willing to put that person to death so that some sense of closure can come to the victims.
Yeah, but if you kill somebody, haven't you forfeited your right to life?
No, you have not. And the point is that we cannot abjure away that right to life, even the decision that we make collectively as a state.
Well, okay. People who take life unnecessarily.
Uh-huh. Do they deserve punishment? Yes, yes.
Okay.
But should they keep their lives? Yes.
So you would just lock them up forever, never, never?
Yes.
Throw away the key?
Yes.
Maybe weld the cells closed?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess I'm being devil's advocate here. I guess I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm not gonna play this anymore. I agree
with
you. I'm not gonna go there anymore. I think that an injustice was done on a lot of levels. Again, I want to repeat. I mean, there's many levels of this. There's your argument, which is an abstract notion of justice. That is that the state should not take a life to justify the taking of a life, guilt or innocence aside.
Right.
And then there's my point, which is there's now evidence, real evidence, that at least should have gotten him possibly another trial. And, you know, and the fact that he could have beat the death penalty by just saying, "Oh, I did it, I'm so sorry," and instead said, no, I didn't do that crime. I'm really, I'm a new man, but I didn't do that crime. And then they gave him the hot shot.
Exactly. Yeah, well, of course, this calls into question a whole different dialogue, and that is, is the death penalty as it exists applied justly and uniformly to everybody?
Well, the answer is no.
The answer is, God, no.
No.
It never has been.
No.
And that brings us to yet another discussion, and that is the racial subtext of the Tukey Williams execution.
Yeah.
The death penalty is applied disproportionately to poor and non-white people.
Oh, no question about that.
Further, Tukey Williams, as founder of the Crips, and one might say a linchpin in the distribution and the spread of the crack epidemic of the 1980s, is a symbol even more than he is a man. So in the hands of a Republican chief executive in California, there's no way that Tukey Williams is going to live.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that, he becomes a symbol of all that's dark.
All that's dark.
All
exactly.
Dark. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, and I think that's a very interesting fact. It also is the case that in each individual case where the death penalty is applied and there are multiple murderers, multiple participants, the guy or gal who steps up and confesses first, lives, and then turns on the other parties involved, and they die. So if everybody's guilty, how is there justice when only one gets the hot shot?
Yeah, how is there justice? And how is there justice fundamentally when even executing a murderer doesn't bring back the murdered? It ultimately falls short of whatever redemptive experience the bereaved, the survivors, the loved ones want to have.
But I think it's reasonable to put such people away forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, I think it is too.
You know.
Yeah.
They see light of day only 1 hour a day or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Further, in the case of somebody like Tukey Williams, who is actually, I believe, underwent a transformative experience while in prison.
Yeah.
And whose work is actually
useful.
Useful. Then by all means, let the man live. And make him a different sort of symbol, a symbol of the notion that redemption is possible, even for those people who commit, or in his case, may have committed, heinous of crimes.
Yeah. No, I think this is really important, and I think it also speaks to the meanness, just the fundamental meanness of our criminal justice system.
Yeah.
It's justice, but it's meanness.
Yeah.
That
meanness is fundamentally racial in nature, and I think we should get into that a little more later.
It's not just racial; it's classist and racist.
Yeah, classist and racist.
But I want to change this topic a little bit.
All right.
In the New York Times this Monday, yesterday, there was a full page ad on page A15, and it says, "We demand Bush step down and take your program with you." Okay. www.worldcantwait.org. www.worldcantwait.org. And this is what they're calling for. World can't wait. Drive out the Bush regime. Your government, on the basis of outrageous lies, is waging a murderous and utterly illegitimate war in Iraq, and other countries are in their sights. Is that true?
Yep.
Yep. Your government is openly torturing people and justifying it. True.
Well, I don't know if they're doing it openly, but they're torturing and justifying it.
Well, you know, they won't agree not to do it. Your government puts people in jail on the merest suspicion, refusing them lawyers and either holding them indefinitely or deporting them in the dead of night.
That's true, too.
Your government is moving every day closer to a theocracy where a narrow and hateful brand of Christian fundamentalism will rule.
Why do you hate America so much?
What?
Go ahead.
Your government suppresses the science that doesn't fit its religious, political, and economic agenda, forcing present and future generations to pay a terrible price in not developing the science.
Yeah, that's true.
Your government is moving to deny women here and all over the world the right to birth control and abortion.
Also true.
Which brings up Alito. The lying son of a gun.
Well, finish that list, because that's a really nice, concise...
Okay. Your government enforces a culture of greed, bigotry, intolerance, and ignorance.
Yeah.
And it says, people look at this and think of Hitler, and they're right to do so. The Bush regime is setting out to radically remake society very quickly in a fascist way and for generations to come. We must act now. The future is in the balance.
That's a whole ball of wax and some nice little bullet points there.
Yeah.
That's
silence stuff. And paralysis are not acceptable. That which you will not resist and mobilize to stop, you will learn or be forced to accept. Also, I think you're collectively guilty. History is full of examples where people who had right on their side fought against tremendous odds and were victorious. And it is also full of examples of people passively hoping to wait it out, only to get swallowed up by a horror beyond what they ever imagined. Awkward language, but... I think it's true. So here's what you got to do, if you agree with this. On the night of President Bush's State of the Union address, bring the noise. Drown out Bush lies. In large cities and small towns, join in rallies 1 hour before Bush's address. Make our determination to drive out the Bush regime the political message of the day. At 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that'd be 6 p.m. here, just as Bush starts to speak everywhere, we will bring the noise. Bang pots. Make... bad trumpet sounds. Scream, yell.
We're going to drown him out.
Drown him out. And this is, by the way, the same tactics. Somebody pointed this out to me last night. An internationally prominent attorney pointed this out. Pointed this out to me last night. This is exactly what they did in to bring down Milosevic in Serbia.
This made a whole bunch of noise and didn't stop.
Well, of course, they had huge numbers of people. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they refuse to allow the lies to go on.
And it happened in the Ukraine as well.
In the Ukraine, yes.
People
with the Orange Movement.
It's sub-zero temperatures, camping out.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands.
These people value freedom so much that they're willing to sit out in the cold day after day to get it.
Yeah.
And here we are in the birthplace of democracy, and we're doing nothing as a people. So I think this is a great idea.
I do.
Number two, on the Saturday following the State of the Union, there has to be big demos. Big.
Yeah.
So I really think that this is an important thing to do. I really think that this Bush step-down campaign needs to be furthered in every community. I think people should make... I said riding on the sidewalk. That's one. You know, I think people should be riding on the sidewalks. I think you should be making posters and putting them up everywhere. I think you cannot have business as usual.
No.
Because this is fascism, and we must stop it.
We need to bury senators and representatives under emails and phone calls.
Absolutely. And if you're interested in more in this... there's some numbers you can call. 1-866-973-4463. That's 1-866-973-4463. 4463. And, of course, if you're online, worldcan'twait.org.
There's another phone number you should call. That's 503-231-8187.
Yes, that is.
This is Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Abe. That's Joe.
Yep.
And we got a lot on the table.
Oh, there's so much stuff.
Some serious things today.
You know, PGE, there's a good article by Steve Dean. I love Steve Dean in the Metro, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's what a Christian should be. I say that as a non-Christian, you understand. But, I mean, he's a good exemplar of that. And he's talking about Portland General Electric and the lawsuit that, you know, let's praise Linda Williams. Let's praise Dan Meek. The lawsuit they're bringing in the interest of all of the people to make PGE pay us the taxes they took from us and then sent to Enron or someplace.
This was the county tax that PGE collected from us,
yeah.
But then didn't give to the county.
Right.
Said we'll give to Enron first.
Right.
Right, because that's more efficient. It to Texas first
instead of just giving
it to Multnomah County.
It's all according to the rules. They said the PUC said it was okay. The PUC said we did not. These guys are, dare I say it, thieves?
Thieves.
Thieves. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Anyway.
Well, who are you going to believe, them or your lying eyes?
This town, this state, we parade our progressivism. This is the city with the edifice complex.
The edifice complex?
Yeah, you know, build a sky bus to the med school. I mean, what possible justification was there for that? $45 million and counting. They're going to put another set of light rail lines, and I like light rail. I want to be clear on this, but they're going to put another set of light rail lines right through downtown, through 5th and 6th, destroying the businesses that they previously messed up when they put the bus mall in, which it was a good idea, but now they're going to do it again because they didn't plan it right. If you want to justify it at all, the Pearl,
yeah,
faux urban center of the universe,
right? And guess where the streetcar's going next?
Where?
Lake Oswego.
Oswego! No, I thought it was going to go to Oregon City.
Well, probably eventually via Lake Oswego.
It would be better,
you know, up MLK.
Are you sure? No, it's not going to go.
The next planned expansion of the streetcar.
But no, that's the streetcar. But this is the light rail.
They're two different things. I understand that. But if you look, where do we need public transit extensions? Not from Portland to Lake Oswego. We need a streetcar up Broadway or up MLK or up Hawthorne or Powell on the east side.
Yes, I heard the gong.
Yeah, the gong.
And then
there's
Alito. I mean, the guy is a lying SOB. And he's going to be in the Supreme Court unless the Democrats somehow gather some courage from somewhere. And then the Democrats. I mean, I'm sorry, Mrs. Clinton? I don't think so.
No.
But there's a new guy, is he still the governor of Virginia? Looks hopeful. He's a conservative Democrat. And at this point, I would accept
that. What's his name?
Oh, remembering? Me? Never. And also, I want to mention something before we go any further. An old friend of mine, I have to say, I have a conflict of interest here. He's an old friend of mine, mm-hmm. John Colburn, who put together a wonderful art show called Baghdad Blues. The show initially ran just like last weekend, but he's extending it. And it's at the Pine Street Studios, which is the old Pine Street Theater, you know, 215 Southeast 9th, right down the street from here.
Oh, okay.
Actually. Yeah, well, he's going to extend his show Wednesday through Friday, the 14th, the 15th, and the 16th, from 5 to 8 in the evening. And then on Saturday, he's going to have it from 12 to 4. And then on Sunday, from 9 to 12 and 6 to 9. These paintings and drawings and stuff are really good. They're really cool. He joins my pantheon of artists I really dig. Lucinda Parker as an abstract expressionist. Hank Pander as a narrative artist.
Norman Rockwell?
I don't like Norman Rockwell.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
You're kidding. And, you know, and Jay Backstrand. Anyway, John Colburn, really good artist. You can actually reach him if you want to, 503-422-0149. That's 503-422-0149. Baghdad Blues, paintings by John Colburn this week. What can I say? Check them out. You know, it's worth looking at. 5 to 8, Wednesday through Friday, kind of an evening thing. Saturday, 12 to 4, Sunday, 9 to 12, and 6 to 9. This weekend. And, maybe you want to, I don't know, buy something? Nah. Anyway, he's got good work. Really good work. And he's a cool guy. We got phone calls.
Yeah, we do.
And I want to remind people, yes, this is KBOO, and we go from the ridiculous to the sublime to the horrifying.
And back again. And no time flat.
Tukey Williams and Bush step down. Are the big topics today. Alito and the Democrats are the minor topic. PGE, another minor topic. The Airbus to hell. All that and more. 231-8187. Who we got? BT!
Hey,
I haven't heard from BT in a while. Hi, BT.
What's going on, BT?
Yeah, you know, I just lay in bed listening to the show, and I get so angry.
You keep your hands to yourself, buddy. No, I'm sorry.
And I just can't force myself to dial, but today I did.
Oh, good for you. I enjoy you, you know.
You know, when I want to talk about the death penalty, but while I was on hold, I heard Abe mention some interesting things about trolley lines going where they really don't belong.
Yes. Hard to know where to start, isn't it?
That's what it's all about, Abe. I mean, wake up and smell the coffee.
Yeah, I know that, BT.
They're not interested in moving people.
I understand that, BT, and that's what I'm criticizing.
Good.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think, BT, you have a stereotype of Abe and I, which is that we're kind of like a knee-jerk, left-wing liberals.
No, not really.
I mean, we are and we are not. I mean, you know, come on.
Joe, I've known of you for years. I know your differences. Abe is still kind of like new to me. He says some dumb things, you know, once in a while, Cat Stevens, for instance, when he was denied access to the U.S. And that's one of the things I want to talk to you about, Abe. You said, how can they keep out a guy who wrote a song called Peace Train, you know, forgetting all about his support of the fatwa of murdering somebody over words? And I thought that, you know what I'm saying?
He did support the fatwa about Rushdie.
And it was all about words. He wanted to kill someone because of words. Well, anyway, so the death penalty.
The death penalty.
I've been working all night, and I take it that the guy was zapped or something.
Well, they hit him with the hot shot. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I always thought that lethal injection was this wimpy way of executing somebody.
What do you like? Cutting
like
the throat or something?
They, you know, it's like these guys stick the tubes in, and they all run behind this glass and watch and say, "I didn't do it." You know.
Well, that's a good point. Actually, it's a good point. The more humane it is, the less, and the more clean it is, the less real it is.
Yeah.
For the people who do it, and for us who allow it to be done.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this guy was a scumbag, and if I were a legislator in a state, I would always vote to get rid of the death penalty. I wouldn't declare it unconstitutional if I was on the Supreme Court, but I believe in getting rid of it. But Abe's
given how often we do it, it's not cruel and unusual.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. Well, it would be cruel and unusual if we did it for, you know, speeding and for robbery, but it should only be murder.
I think it should be for speeding, actually.
Yeah.
Death penalty for speeding would really.
So they used to do it for some kidnapping. Like, wasn't there a famous death penalty case in the 50s? That speed check or something? He kidnapped someone and just.
Well, they've done it a lot. They used to do it for a lot.
In England,
they used to give you the death penalty for picking a pocket. Back in the 18th century.
Well, anyway, the thing about giving someone life in prison, well, that's what everyone says, but in practice, there's just way too many people being let out after only 7 or 8 years, and then they kill again.
Do you actually have a stat with that, or is that just kind of like you think it's true?
Oh, no, I know of some cases. Now, if you want to dig in and call, I couldn't give you the percentage, but, you know, you just read the papers. There's like a famous murder that made national news, and then you read the article and you find out that the guy had been in for murder before and was let out after only 7 years.
So you have like a pragmatic...
Beaconwall. What?
So this is like a pragmatic thing? You say, since some of these guys get out too early...
No. I'm saying when people who are given life sentences or sentences of, you know, 60 years or more are actually kept in, then you might see support for the death penalty. Yeah, but that's going to take a while.
Well, that's
easily nobody's paying attention. Someone's going to say, oh, don't worry, we're never going to release this guy. And then, you know, 5 years later, no one's really paying attention anymore.
It's easy enough just to not let convicted murderers out of jail, isn't it?
But his point is, he's saying, if I understand you, BT, you're saying, hey, this really happens, that the heinous criminals get out early. Now, I'm not sure how true that is. I'm not sure how often that's actually happened. I don't have the stats.
It happens.
I think we need stats here.
Yeah, you know,
facts are good in this situation.
Okay. Well, a famous case would be Roman Navarro, I believe his name. He was a silent actor who played Ben-Hur in the famous 1926 version, a famous homosexual actor who was beaten to death when he was an old man in 1969, and his two killers were let out after only about 5 years.
Ah, okay. I don't even know.
There's
the
one
case,
example
so.
Is famous.
Right. I won't argue with you about that.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that was unfair, wrong.
Oh, and they beat him over hours trying to get him to tell him where he had some money hidden in this house. It was
which, of course, he did not have.
Yeah, I believe, right. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
but,
Joe, but
you know, you just show me the weapons, and I'll tell
but
you.
But all I'm saying is, all I'm saying is that when someone says, "Oh, I got an idea. Let's just keep them in prison for life," you know, supposedly that's what we've been doing, and it's
not. Yeah, but what you're really saying is, you're saying kind of a practical solution to these heinous crimes is killing people because we are unable to carry out our resolve to keep them in jail.
Oh no. I'm saying I want to see life sentences and make them stick.
Ah,
okay. Well, I'm already there.
But you know how long it takes to try to finally realize that that's actually working?
Well, this thing took a
while. Yeah, it can take a lifetime.
It can take a lifetime.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else, BT? It's your opportunity, man.
I'll call you next week, I guess.
All right, then.
Do that.
See you later.
All right. Wow.
BT laying in bed, pissed off.
Yeah, but BT laying in bed it's quite a thought. All right.
Isn't
All right, 2318187. Let's go to Bruce. Hi, Bruce.
Ruth.
I'm sorry, Ruth. Please forgive me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wanted to say this. I don't think people think about this at all in regards to people being sorry for crimes they've committed. I can't see how. I know there are all different kinds of situations and people in prison.
Yeah.
But I can't see how it's cold, mechanical, harsh environment, and I can't see how anybody could be truly remorseful for any bad they might have done.
Because the environment is so awful in prison?
Well, I would think so. Have you been in there?
Only for very, not in prison, actually. I've been in jail, but for very brief time.
Yeah, for a short time, and that was enough to
I hate it when
slap
that door,
me in the face.
You know, when the door goes, I hate that.
Well, anyway, I don't see how most people could honestly become remorseful in such a cold,
well, but
cold
that, but that makes it all.
That's my opinion at this point in my life. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. But, you know, if she's right, that makes it all the more remarkable. Prison is not a place for rehabilitation. They've long since given up on that.
So she's saying a component to some of this alleged remorse is the fact that life really sucks in prison. So people adopt an attitude of remorse in the hopes that maybe they'll get out of jail.
Well, I think that's probably
true. That's probably a factor in most feelings of remorse.
I certainly would.
Whatever.
Yeah, hey, you know, that's why you punish a kid, I guess.
Yeah, right. He's up in his room with no dinner.
A little bit different than that.
And it sucks, and maybe he starts to feel a little sorry about what he did.
Well, you know, Tukey, part of his response was to lift weights, I noticed.
Well, he did that before he was in jail.
Oh, really?
He was
a big,
part of
big
his,
man.
Oh, he was huge.
Huge guy.
Huge. In fact, Arnold.
Arnold!
Yeah, complimented him, I guess, back in the day about his physique.
You're kidding.
No.
Well, Arnold, you know.
Yeah.
He's looking a little bad, Arnold.
And in many, many ways.
2318187. Who is it? Jay. Hi, Jay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Listen, there should be, as there is jury duty, there should be executioner's duty.
Oh, an interesting idea.
I think you're onto something there.
No, go ahead, man. That's an interesting idea.
Well, let's say I just want to leave that, then I have a couple of other points to make.
Sure.
If a strategic and organized, and I've said this before, and it's been rejected by your show, I don't know which of you or both of you, but an economic boycott, you get Bush out of office in a minute. The people who are supporting him, the corporations, if they're losing money, even one of them, to a noticeable degree on their part, Bush is finished.
No, I want to be clear. I didn't reject your idea. I said it was premature. That is, that the people weren't there yet. But I'll have to tell you, it's getting to the place where you're going to end up being right.
Well, I think that in conjunction with all that you've been touting lately, the sidewalk whiting, the world can't wait efforts and all of that together, will definitely remove Bush. But without taking money out of the pockets of corporations, it's very difficult. One other thing I had. Capital punishment definitely should not be. And any day of the week, I can give a good, strong argument and discredit any arguments in the wrong direction for capital punishment. I guess it was Bruce who just called in.
Ruth.
No, the male.
Oh, BT.
Oh, BT, yeah.
BT, yeah. Yeah. He has the right idea once he gets through his emotions, you know, and he comes down to the logical. The sentence should be firm.
Mm-hmm.
No parole. We're talking about for major crimes, murders.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, even some murders, you know, like manslaughter and murders that aren't, as you call, heinous, you know, the person can be released, but they can have a tattoo right in the middle of the forehead, which can be removed.
Whoa, the mark of Cain.
Whatever you want to call it, you know.
Well, that's what it would be. I mean, that's the biblical reference.
Yeah. And they can walk around, but there should be legislation that assures that this person is not discriminated against in housing, education, health care, things like that.
You're actually suggesting the biblical injunction, because God said that he said nobody should do anything else to that guy.
Mm-hmm. He or she should be able to go to work every day, have a house to live in, but his neighbors should know what it is he's done, and he should have I don't want to waste time on describing, but he should have a list. You live in a town of 10 people, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain percentage of those people who you have to go to and prove to them that you've done things to make up for what it is you've done.
It's like this Earl show on TV.
I don't know about that. But, you know, you should say, I killed him. He has 3 children.
Yeah.
He was contributing X number of dollars to support those children and the family. And I'm doing that now and have done it for a certain time,
mm-hmm.
as required by law. Now I ask you to sign this petition that will allow me to re-enter society without my tattoo. Please take the laser and remove it.
Well, that's a very interesting idea. Mm-hmm. And the idea that the person who takes the life is responsible for the support forever of the people who would have gotten support from the person whose life was taken.
Right.
And, of course, you can't really. There's no way to do that, but not just symbolically, but as much as possible financially. I mean, that's an interesting idea. Listen, man, I really appreciate your comments.
Okay, bye.
Keep calling.
Yeah, that's an excellent call.
Yeah, excellent call.
And I think his execution idea, or execution duty idea, if we required people to serve execution duty, I think you'd see the death penalty go away so fast.
Absolutely. What about that? A jury, an executioner's jury of 12.
No, I'm talking about witnesses. We're going to draft a contingent of citizens to witness this execution.
Oh, I thought you meant like 12 people would just hack the guy up.
No. The 12 witnesses to witness this execution so that they can testify that the will of the people has been done, justice has been meted out upon this person, and he or she is dead.
And they're selected at random.
Right.
The voting
and they have to sit there and they got to watch him die.
Well, I would go further. They each would get a button. And one of the 12 buttons actually is the button that does it.
All right, so you're saying the state should call upon its citizens to murder other citizens?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a hard case.
Why don't you run for office and see where that gets you, Joe?
Well, the only time I ever ran for office, I came in second. All right, 2-3. That's not so much of a joke, is it? 231-8187. Number to call. This is Talk Radio. I'm Joe Uris. That's Abe Proctor. We are on KBOO 90.7 FM. The topic so far: Portland General Electric and its lion eyes. Alito and his lion eyes, but so many liars.
Yeah, the Bush administration and
their
lion eyes,
and how we can bring them down, and how you all ought to support the World Can't Wait drive, right? And they make noise at the time, an hour before, and all through the time of the president's lion eyes speech to the chicken, can't say the other word, chicken Congress, and then on the Saturday following, big demos.
Yep.
And right on the sidewalks. Hey, how many people? Did anyone out there actually right on the sidewalks after I urged it? I wonder.
Yeah, call us, tell us what you wrote and where, and you know.
Yeah, we'd like to know about that.
And we're also talking about the death penalty and its racist eyes.
Yeah, it's racist and classist. Listen, you know, rich people do not get the death penalty. I don't know if you noticed that.
And generally, white people don't either.
Well, no.
Well, unless they're poor.
Poor white people
do.
Even if they become Christians. You know, Bush made fun of that woman who turned into a Christian.
Carla Faye Tucker, yeah.
Yeah.
In an interview, he mocked how she pleaded for her life.
Yes.
He adopted this whiny little voice.
Oh, please don't murder me.
Yeah.
Something like that.
As I was doing a little reading about this morning,
yes.
The number of executions in this country peaked in 1999. There were 98 people executed that year. And this was the year that the Bush brothers were duking it out to see who could be Lord High Executioner for the year. Jeb in Florida and W in Texas.
Who won?
I believe W won.
Mm.
So
that's a distinction.
Yeah, he was the execution king.
Wow.
Today. Do we have somebody on the line, Eduardo?
Is there somebody waiting?
Oh,
who is it?
Hello?
Brian, good morning.
Hey.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm fine.
All right, sorry to keep you waiting there, man.
Hey, you know, it's vermin, the vermin liberal, like this last caller. If we adopted his philosophy, we'd have the highest ratio of murders in the country. Not that
world, we do. Yeah, outside of wars, we do. We already win that.
That's exactly right.
But we don't win it because we don't have executions.
If we had more governors like Jeb and W in Texas, we'd have less murders. I would.
Well, what's your evidence for that, man? I mean, that's okay to say, but is it just kind of like philosophical, or do you have some kind of?
Let me tell you something. If we limited the appeals process to 1 year, at the end of that 1 year, you die like this vermin did last night.
Uh-huh.
Our murder rate would go down.
Do you actually think there's no incentive.
You murder somebody and you know you're going to be on death row for 26 plus years. And if you get stuck in a state with a liberal judge who is going to postpone that, you can live longer. Where's the incentive?
There's no evidence that the death penalty works as a deterrent. If someone's going to kill somebody, they're going to kill somebody, death penalty or no. And let me ask you this. Did you feel good when you heard that Tookie Williams had been executed?
Yes, I did.
Did you feel satisfied?
Good. Yes, I felt good. You know why? Because he took
four lives,
and he deserved to go.
Okay. Goodbye.
I
thank
felt
you for
very
the call.
Good.
Well, why are you so mean to that guy?
Because anybody who feels good and feels that justice has been done when a free state executes another citizen, I don't have time for him. Sorry.
You're harsher than I am.
Yeah, I guess I am.
Is it your
savagery. That's barbarism.
Wow.
You know, and there's plenty of other societies I think would be more welcoming for people like Brian.
I'm glad you get to do that, and I get to be the good guy. Maybe I'm not the good guy. Maybe I'm the chicken liberal.
Yeah, am I passing judgment on that attitude? Yes, I am.
Okay, 231-8187. Bob, you're on the air. Watch out. Abe is mad.
Well, you know, we live in a capitalistic society.
I've noticed that.
There's a chronic shortage of public funds.
Yeah.
What about going back to public executions and charging, hanging, firing squad, guillotine, and, charging all the traffic will bear? You might be able to do pretty good.
Your thinking is like mine. I think if you're going to
pay-per-view TV would really be a...
Absolutely. If you're going to do this, there ought to be a profit in it. I wouldn't mind getting the concession. I'm cynical enough. I think that's a very good point. I think, in fact, beheadings of various sorts...
Yeah, that. Yeah.
It's always popular. A lot of blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's let your imagination be the limit.
Well, you don't want to let my imagination.
What
be
about
the limit.
Arena with tigers?
Well,
and
the no cruel and inhuman punishment. Cruel and unusual.
I think pay-per-view TV.
Pay-per-view TV is definitely and we're very squeamish about this. I noticed that we don't show the execution footage. And for a long time, we didn't even show the bodies coming back from Iraq. In fact, the government still doesn't allow that. Officially.
Well, you can get films of the Holocaust and so forth.
Well, your kids, your innocent, relatively speaking, children can see rape and bloody murder on their video games, which parents are going to buy their kids for Christmas.
There you go. Thank you.
This very year. All right. 231-8187.
Well, his idea is a lot like Jay's... execution duty idea. If we make people watch this stuff, I think we'll see the death penalty go away really fast.
Well, here's a scary thought.
Except for
I don't
people
believe
like
that.
Brian, who
no,
would wait up.
No, see, I think you're wrong. I think
subscribe to the execution channel.
I think the culture
and the cable service.
You're mad. I think the culture is such that people would actually pay, and it would not decrease in executions. In fact, there'd be an increased demand. I think we're like Rome and the Empire in a bad time. I think our people have been. A lot of people, not everyone, have been so desensitized, dehumanized, that we are the belly of the beast. We are the empire, and we thirst for blood. And many of our people share that thirst.
Well, why does the Pentagon censor footage and photography coming out of the war zone? Why has the only objective visual journalism that's come out of Iraq been done by people who aren't embedded with military units? Why is that going on?
Well, because I think that the governmental people, the Pentagon, et cetera, are actually behind the curve of American evil.
Right. That the war would get more popular if they just turn loose the cameras?
Right. That was a sneeze, not a comment.
Oh, okay.
For a lot of people, I think that there is, well, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I think that for a lot of people who have been so desensitized by media representations of gory events, seeing the real thing has a certain thrill. Now, it might pass, but I'm afraid there's still that element.
No, I disagree. Well, one of the big reasons Vietnam came to an end is because Dan Rather was there, because Walter Cronkite showed on his program and said what he said on his program, and because media coverage, specifically images, both still and moving, brought the war home to people in a way that had never happened before.
You know, you may be right.
And when you've got a war like this one and like Vietnam with questionable motives to begin with,
right,
it doesn't take much to tip people over to opposition.
Well, I think I'm going to abandon my cynical position and come over to your side. I think you're right. I think we should have an open display of what really happens, and I think that the American people are capable of making a good judgment. I think given that opportunity. But I still think that the execution show would be big.
Yeah.
I'm afraid so. There's just let's say that even if 90% of the American people are with you on this and with me, there's still that 10%. That's a lot of money for the pay-per-view execution. 231-8187. Don't let my cynicism get you down.
I think it would be as popular as public lynchings in Alabama circa 1920 or 30?
Listen, I don't want to get into this, but we are a culture that engaged in lynching a lot. There are postcards that people used to send out.
Oh, sure.
We're bad.
Yeah, but I'm saying that attitude, that factor, lies behind the way the death penalty is applied right now. It's applied overwhelmingly towards the poor and the non-white.
Oh, yeah.
Overwhelmingly towards the poor, and even more so towards the non-white.
Yep.
And
no question.
You're right. So the criminal justice system, and I'm making finger quotes as I say that.
Yeah, justice.
Since emancipation has been one of the tools by which a large proportion of white people in this country have maintained a state of basic inequality between themselves and black people in this country. And it goes on to this day. And now that racism, it's not chic anymore to be an overt racist, the Republican Party, which, let's face it, is the party of old line and new line racism in this country.
Yeah, it took over the role from the Southern Democrats.
And now uses essentially code speak to address that part of its base.
I absolutely agree with
you. And we can trace it back. We can look back to Richard Nixon and his Southern strategy. He's running on a law and order ticket.
Right.
By which he won a large proportion of white votes in the South. Because law and order was, of course, code for keeping the darkies in their place.
No, well.
It's true.
Aside from your language, I absolutely agree with you.
In 1980, when Ronald Reagan launched his campaign for president, where did he do it? He did it in Philadelphia, Mississippi. The place where three civil rights workers were murdered in cold blood during the civil rights movement of the 1960s. He could have started his campaign anywhere in the country, but he chose Philadelphia, Mississippi. Why? To send that same coded message to the racist base of the Republican Party. George Bush, in both of his campaigns, gave a speech at Bob Jones University, where, until very recently, interracial dating was forbidden. He could have spoken at any college in the country, but he chose Bob Jones. To shore up that base. And every once in a while, the veil slips aside. Willie Horton, perfect example.
Yep.
And welfare mothers, again, under Reagan.
Yeah.
This specter of the out-of-control, criminal, parasitic, black element has been raised by the Republican Party in one form or another for decades now.
You know, I'm not sure who this was, but I think it was Johnny Cash was at the White House for Nixon to perform, mm-hmm. and Nixon asked him if he'd play Welfare Cadillac, and Johnny Cash said no.
Well, good for Johnny Cash.
Well, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
231-8187.
And every once in a while, the veil falls down, like what happened to Trent Lott a couple years ago, when he said Strom Thurmond was on the right track when he was ran as a Dixiecrat for president.
Yeah, he did say that.
He did say that.
And of course, Strom Thurmond, as we know, Strom Thurmond had a certain affection for African Americans.
Strom Thurmond had his cake and was eating it, too.
Oh, what a cynical society we live in. 231-8187. No, we're not going to do repeat calls today, folks. Again, this Bush step down thing. I really think that this has legs. I think that we've gotten to the point now where enough American people are pissed off enough that we can start calling for the impeachment of this criminal.
Yeah, and
He wasn't elected in 2000. He wasn't elected in 2004. No. The Democrats are so chicken they allowed this to happen. I mean, we need a new something.
Yeah, the never elected mouthpiece for murdering plutocrats. It's the guy we have in the big chair right now.
231-8187. Homer. Hey, Homer. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good.
Want to hear from you, man.
Excuse me. This is the first time I think I called through phone.
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, I was listening in on the section where you were talking about Tukey and the racism and Enron.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, where my situation is at, there is a situation, there's a part of Enron that they don't talk about, and that was the situation years ago when they were trying to build a fusion reactor.
I don't know about this. Well,
actually, it was Princeton tried to deal with it, Stanford tried to deal with it, and some people over in Japan tried to deal with it. They couldn't make it work. They said it was putting too much in, it couldn't get enough out. Well, it turns out that it does work. There's a number they weren't using in the ad calculations.
Hmm.
And the reason why they couldn't do it was because it infringed upon patent rights. And the racism comes in that the patent rights belong to, it belongs to somebody that they didn't want to see. Somebody way out of the past.
Who's that? Who is that?
That's Granville T. Woods.
Really?
Yes. Huh. Yes.
I know nothing about this, man.
It's the electrical distribution system, and it's built upon the invention or the device called a motor generator, which is actually inside diesel locomotives. It's put up by diesel engine.
Huh.
And it turns out that is a mechanical perpetual motion machine. All you do is transpose the mathematics from its electromechanical device to thermodynamics. And you wind up with a fusion reactor that works.
Is this serious? Is this real?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, see, I don't know. I simply have no idea of the reality of this or not.
Well, I had a lot of people helping me with bits and pieces of information to put it together and see how it does and should work. And it's very simple. It's what goes around comes around. But the problem is they had a situation where the holdup deal with patent rights. They do a patent rights, and there's probably no bill of sale in there somewhere that they go get jammed with that, with liable for it, and they're trying to keep a lid on this, and they don't want to get out or nothing. But what it would do was it not only shows a situation of perpetual energy, it's also something with perpetual life too, because that calculation goes into chemistry.
Homer, listen. Do you have some printed matter on this? Would you send it to me?
It's on the internet.
What's the site?
FamilySearch.org, the Mormon Tabernacle Church.
Okay, say it again.
The Mormon Tabernacle Churches, or it's FamilySearch.org.
Okay, FamilySearch.org.
But you're not going to, in order to find out what the devices are, you have to look in the patent files, okay? And I think you will find, I don't have the information in front of me. It's like I have it stored away.
Well, listen, if you want to take the trouble, 20 Southeast 8th, send me some actual printed information about where to find it or what it is and so on. But I want to give some other people an opportunity.
Yeah, you can email us links to Joe and
yahoo.com. That's the situation now that, you know, is the reason why I'm not able to do it, because, believe it or not, they won't let me out because I know this information.
Where are you?
Believe it or not, I am in the Oregon State Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Trying to get out of here.
Listen,
that's why they want to say anything, because they say, well, wait, he's a nut. He's a nut. Well, look out, he's a nut. No, it's just the opposite. I represent a threat to the psychiatric community who've been malpracticing for years on me, and they're stuck right now.
Okay, listen, man, I want to give some others an opportunity.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
right.
All right.
Okay, so what do we do with that?
FamilySearch.org. You can give it a look.
All right.
See?
He says he's wrongly incarcerated in the nut house. But everybody in the nut house is wrongly incarcerated in the nut house, you know. Of course, I worked at the nut house. I actually worked at Ward 5A up on the hill. back in the early 60s.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we do about that.
Well, and I know that there were a lot of people in there that were there for what I would call political reasons. A woman who ran off with, left her children and her husband, ran off with a gardener, for example, like, you know, some D.H. Lawrence novel, you know. And the guy was influential, and he had her brought back, and they put her on the ward.
She's a nut?
She was not a nut. She just didn't want to live with her husband and children.
What a nut.
Well, no. I mean, it was embarrassing. It was horrible. 231-8187. Here's Randall. Hi, Randall.
Hey, Abe, Joe. How are you guys today?
All right.
Executions.
Yeah.
How about...
Is this going to be a morbid call?
No. This is a way to ultimately justify the taking of another's life.
Well, let's hear the brilliant Jesuitical thinking here.
Later on, you find out that the person didn't do the crime.
Which has happened a lot. Yes. Okay. So we find out that an innocent man went down.
If somebody's been executed for something they ultimately have been found not to do, anyone who's connected with that execution is liable for execution.
Holy smoke, man!
Well, the Incans did it.
Inca,
you know,
Inca?
Asian people, you know, if you messed up, if a doctor did a procedure and the patient died, guess who died?
Well, wait a minute. Now, for the doctors, that's a little...
That way you got to make sure you know what you're doing.
Well, that way you wouldn't want to be a doctor.
Positive.
Wouldn't it be easier just to abolish executions?
Oh, well, yeah, that would too.
Hey, listen, thanks for the suggestion.
One other thing, fascism.
Okay. Yes.
I think
a problem with a lot of the isms that are used is that people aren't quite sure of what exactly you mean when you say fascism.
Oh,
because your fascism might be different from my fascism.
Oh.
This rolls into the idea of we need to define a lot of things in
I'm game for defining fascism.
And we need to all come together and have, like, a night of definitions.
Oh, the night of the definitions.
Exactly what we mean.
No, I like the concept of the night of the definitions.
The night of the long words.
And with the Bushy Boys, let us not all forget who our current president's grandfathers were.
Okay.
They were both convicted of trading with the enemy, selling Nazi war bonds as late as 1943. And one of them went on to become a U.S. senator?
Yep.
Come on, people.
It started a political dynasty.
Let's start really looking at our history. We have a 10-minute historical frame of time.
Yep.
Listen, thanks for the call. But I think the night of the long definitions is an event I would not attend.
Well, let's do it then.
Okay.
All right,
take care. 231-8187. Let's go out to Francis. Hi, Francis.
Hello.
How are you
doing? Good morning.
Oh, I'm fine. I find nothing humorous about any of the things that are happening right now.
Well, that's, you know, that's my perverted nature.
Humor, you know, to hang in there with it. But
what's that? Hang on a second, Francis.
Are you there?
Got to clear up the sounds.
Oh, Francis, call us back.
Call back. You're the exception to the rule here.
Technical
we do want to hear from
snafu
you.
There.
Technical
sorry
glitch.
About that.
A cable moment.
Yep. Call us back, please.
Okay. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, I just want to, again, I want to push this Bush step down thing. The night of President Bush's State of the Union address, bring the noise. Drown out Bush's lies starting an hour before. Go publicly, just out on your porch. Bang, 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 bang. You know, this has worked in other countries. I don't see why it can't. In places that, you know, places that are really, it's difficult to have democracy. Places like Ukraine. I mean, why can't we do this stuff? I mean, for the fact of the matter, the government, although they saw outrageous lies, is wagering a murderous and utterly illegitimate war in Iraq. And thereafter other countries as well. Our government is torturing people, justifying it. Our government puts people in jail on the mere suspicion, then refuses them lawyers. Holds them indefinitely. Our government is moving each day closer to a theocracy, where a narrow and hateful brand of Christianity, of Christian fundamentalism, is going to rule. Our government suppresses science. I mean, it's all true. Our government is trying to deny women their rights. All true. Our government enforces a culture of greed, of bigotry, intolerance, and ignorance. This is the Bush administration. Unfortunately, it's the collusion of the Democrats as well. I think we need to bring this all down. We need to make a change. We need to send a clear message to the Democrats that they better straighten out, or we're going to have to do something.
Yeah. I mean, but he's not going to step down.
No.
This protest is essential, but it's entirely
it's
symbolic.
It's symbolic.
Right.
But you've got to do it.
The concrete action you can take in next year's general election, of course, is to vote out the Republicans.
Absolutely. And to give money to those candidates who promised to get rid of these guys. I also, on the Saturday afterward, there's a big demo. I'm hoping people will do this in every city and town across America. The list of sponsors of this thing is just, you know, Kurt Vonnegut, Gore Vidal, Alice Walker. I mean, good people.
Oh, absolutely.
And I really think that we need this. We need to take responsibility. I want to see people writing on the sidewalks, writing on the walls. I want to see posters everywhere. Creative energy out there. You know, put it out there. Put it out there. Give a week of your time. If you can't give a week, give a day. If you can't give a day, give a couple of hours.
I think it grows more and more probable with each passing day and with each revelation of scandal in Congress and in the executive branch that the Republicans may very well lose their majority in the House next year. And if that's the case, then impeachment is actually on the table.
Well, yeah, but remember that they rigged the
right.
The electoral process in Texas and elsewhere.
Yeah, apparently when that was all going down,
yeah.
a group of Justice Department attorneys said that that plan was in violation of the Voting Rights Act.
That's true.
And that they were overruled by higher-level political appointees within the Department of Justice, and the plan was allowed to go forth. So it may be that those district boundaries will be invalidated.
Wow.
Between now and November.
Oh, I'm not holding
my
breath.
And that maybe even special elections will take place.
That would be weird.
That would be very weird, but it seems to be the only
is there a provision for special elections? I don't think.
I imagine in the Texas State Constitution there's something that would allow for.
Texas State Constitution allows a lot of weird stuff. All right, 231-8187. Francis is back. Hi, Francis.
Hello.
Sorry you got cut off there.
It was kind of surreal last evening. We watched one of those cable news channels. And
no, don't do that now.
Flash from speaking about what was a serious, serious event that was occurring in California and then show the clips of the interviews with George Bush and go back and forth, and it was like, oh my God, this is unreal. It's not real, but it is. It's
mm-hmm.
happening here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing that concerns me is, you know, arguments against the death penalty, of course, are always very poignant. And Mike Farrell was very eloquent when they did speak to him last night about how it cheapens our society
mm-hmm.
and all of that. And the fact that, you know, recently over 140 people have been released from death row because of new technology and DNA evidence and so on.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Over, you know, and if they had been killed within a year of, as this one of your callers suggested, we would have killed 140 more innocent people.
Well, he's angry.
But,
he wants to punish somebody.
He wouldn't have gotten his kicks. Yeah.
But, you know, and that kind of mentality concerns me because I think there's something very insecure and weak in a heart that feels that way. But my concern also is the fact that when Mr. Williams was convicted, I think it was in 81, was right at the beginning of the perpetrations of all kinds of gang violence and the influx of crack cocaine into
right.
our urban communities. And
mm-hmm.
and it was shown later that a lot of law enforcement officers and people in L.A. were involved in planting evidence and railroading people to prison. And for the fact that three people who provided hearsay evidence to convict Mr. Williams came out in the last 72 hours because their consciences were bothering them so much to make signed affidavits stating that he was framed and their testimony was coerced, and that Arnold Schwarzenegger, he didn't have to commute his sentence. He could have just had a stay to investigate those statements further.
That's
the
true.
The fact that he didn't do that, that he couldn't find it in his girly man self to have the guts to stand up and say, oh, this needs to be investigated further.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to know the law. That's why he's in another wing of the government. He's not a court officer. He's the governor of California.
Right.
That gives him the right to make a decision that doesn't have to be based on total factual legal evidence.
No.
And the fact that he didn't do it, as you guys were talking, makes him a murderer. And one of Tukey's friends who was there last night
mm-hmm.
said that they are not going to stop. They will prove that he was innocent.
Well,
but whether he was or not, as Mike Farrell said, the fact that we still do this cheapens our society. And as Mike Farrell also said, when we start to realize that what people do is a direct result of what we do to them, then maybe we can move to another level where we can feel good about going around the world talking about our values.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right, Francis. And we agree with you. Seriously, I'm very cynical, so I...
Oh, I know. It's absurd. The whole thing is so absurd. You've got to laugh, but it's sad when you think about the people who are hurt in the process.
Well, and thank you for the call. And I would just point out that we are committing a social murder of the city of New Orleans right now.
This is true.
And another example of racism, a classic example of punishing the poor and African-Americans. Francis, thank you for the call.
Every one of California's 30 million residents woke up a murderer this morning.
Oh, well. 231-8187. Nicole, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share with you guys a really interesting website and a document that was that I heard about on a Morning Edition on Saturday morning. There was some group called Platform that had come out and was alleging that the contracts with the big multinational oil companies were quite disadvantageous to the Iraqi people, and they were ready to roll as soon as the elections were over.
Huh.
And
that's interesting.
It is. And the website, I looked up Platform, and it's a great, really multidisciplinary activist group in London, but their report, which was released on the 22nd of November, is called Crude Designs, the Rip-Off of Iraqi's Oil Wealth, and it's published not only by Platform, but some American organizations, the Institute for Policy Studies, War on Want, which is English and was started right after World War II,
right.
Global Policy Forum, Oil Change International, and the New Economics Foundation.
Okay, now what's the website again?
The website is, hold on one second, because I drafted a letter to my representative, Blumenauer, to ask if there was any way that that he could make sure that the U.S. government, instead of going along with this, stood up to benefit the Iraqi people so that we taxpayers don't get hit with more costs of redevelopment or rebuilding after the war because the multinationals had taken all the money kind of the same way that they took all of their record profits and looked at us and people saying, can you help with Katrina? And they said, not a penny.
Right.
At any rate, the website is called www.carbonweb.org.
Wait a minute,
carbonweb.org / crude designs HTM.
Crude designs.
Yeah, okay. Because, and just to, I mean, as I, sort of put this thing together, it kind of makes the whole charade make sense when you start seeing how the election is going to be held. It's going to be a new parliament and the backdoor contracts that will, literally steal billions and billions from the people of Iraq will have already been done without any transparent public policy.
Oh, absolutely.
The
level of theft, the level of theft of this administration and its cronies is just amazing. It's astounding.
It is.
It really beats out anything of the past. These are the criminals of the century. They are also extremely dangerous, and they're extremely murderous.
Well, in terms of oil, the history of oil, I don't think they're any different than the history of obtaining oil and writing up contracts. So in that sense, they're just, again, as usual.
We have to let you go because you're breaking up. But I really appreciate the call, and we will look at that website.
Yeah, I think... what happens to the Iraqi oil industry after these elections will tell you all you need to know, really.
Carbonweb.org and Crude Designs.
I would wager that no candidate that has the backing of the United States government is advocating nationalizing the Iraqi petroleum industry, for example.
Well, please. Please.
Yeah.
Nationalization, bad.
Right.
Profit for American corporations, good. By the way, I saw this Syriana movie.
Did you? Oh, yeah, I want to see that.
It's good. It's good. It doesn't go far enough, but it's good.
About the oil industry.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's quite good.
Yeah.
Worth seeing.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 9 on Between the Covers, host Alice Perry interviews Nina Marie Martinez, whose debut novel is Icaramba, a story inspired by a Mexican game of chance. Chance.
Chance.
At 9:30, chance. We'll hear a recent talk by Barry Lynn, executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Obviously, part of the war on Christmas. Lynn is an attorney and ordained minister, spoke last month in Portland.
The war on Christmas! Those elves!
I'm going to talk next week about the war on Christmas.
I'm making a crish.
Did you know?
Crash.
This weekend, Lars is erecting a huge cross in Pioneer Courthouse
Square. How about if he climbs up on it and we could put nails in? Doesn't he want to die for his God?
In his heart of hearts, that's what he wants.
Crucifixion?
We're not going to do it.
We're not going to do that.
No. And on the cross, it's going to say Jesus is the reason for the season.
Jesus is the reason for the money making and everything?
Right. Because
did Jesus plan that we should be money making?
Lars is a Christian and thus an oppressed minority.
But wait. He probably doesn't understand that the original, the Puritans and stuff, they banned Christmas. The exchange of gifts and so on was pagan, they said.
Yeah.
And I don't see any relationship between buying a video game that has rape and murder and Jesus.
You don't see any distinction.
I can't see how they're related.
We're going to have to talk about that.
Yeah.
All right. And at 10:30 on stage in studio, hear a special live performance by local violinist Aaron Meyer. And at 11 on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. We'll hear excerpts of a press conference where witnesses describe the execution of Stanley Tookie Williams.
Ooh.
Also, reactions from his attorney, the NAACP, and the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Angela Davis. Also, a look at the case of Ruben Cantu. More than a dozen years after his execution in Texas, a further investigation into his case has provided new information supporting his unwavering claim to innocence. And tune in tonight at 5 for the Cable Evening News featuring an interview with James Yee, the former military chaplain at Guantanamo, who was falsely accused of terrorism by the U.S. government. A Muslim chaplain, believe it or not.
Yes, of Asian background.
That's right. At 6, it's Out Loud, and at 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline.
Yeah. I think that there's so much evidence that justice is not done with executions. No matter what your position on capital punishment, it's really clear that our system is so imperfect that you can't be comfortable doing it.
Yeah, and the injustice was so outrageous a few years ago that Illinois' then-governor Jack Ryan,
a Republican,
instituted a moratorium on a death penalty because so many cases were found after the fact to have been false.
But, the slogan of, I think it's the 82nd Airborne, kill them all and let God sort them out, is sort of the American policy, actually.
Right.
I mean, it really is. It's
yeah, it ain't airborne troopers in that, pushing the button.
Well, yeah. You'd think.
No.
Okay. Next, 2318187. Ben, you're on the air.
Beth.
Beth. I can't hear. I'm sorry. I got bad ears. Beth, please forgive me.
That's fine.
Good morning.
I'm just calling sort of to speak to what Frances had mentioned, but I didn't know she was going to mention it because I'd called before her.
That's okay.
I was really I was really distraught when Schwarzenegger didn't let him appeal, which is what the lawyers were trying to do, and he was interviewed on Democracy Now, and I heard that interview was almost an hour long, and then also the lady was interviewed who was defending him, and they were trying to bring more information to his case, to the justice system, and of course now that's not going to help him, but she said as long as she lives, she's going to continue on to prove that he was innocent. And at that point, I would like to address what happens to the people that execute, like Bush and this Austrian weightlifter who always wanted to marry a Kennedy. Those kind of people, what's going to happen to them when they execute innocent people and they find out down the road that those people that they murdered are innocent?
Nothing.
When Abe cut off the fellow who used the word vermin, I was very grateful. I think it's pretty easy to see a sensational execution or a murderer who has been executed to speak. speak of it because it is sensational, as opposed to a mealy-mouthed, feeble-minded president casually saying, well, I think only 30,000 Iraqis have been killed so far.
Wasn't that incredible?
Yeah. And, you know, there's so many ways to look at economic murder, which is the slow way to die. And it's the way that I think the fellow who used the word vermin has called before and has spoken to Republicans as being in power, meaning that they're in the right because they're in power. I don't think so. Anyway, I was really glad you cut him off. One thing I just want to say really quick, Joe. When you are talking to people and then you cut them off, you say, well, now let's give someone else a chance to speak. And then you talk for 20 minutes. And I just wanted to mention that because I don't know if you know that you do it, but you do it. And I think there's a lot of people that are held on the lines and never get to speak. But anyway, thank you for your show.
Sure.
You guys make a good team. Bye.
Thanks. A little criticism. I don't know about 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you do. You have been known to do that.
20 minutes?
I don't know. The answer to her question is what happens to the Austrian weightlifter and to the Texas cowboy?
God sorts them out.
And any other state executive who signs a death warrant falsely, the answer is nothing. Nothing happens.
Well, but God sorts them out. If you believe in that
thing. In that yeah. But they never have to answer to their
constituents,
fellow citizens.
Yeah. No, they don't. In fact, it makes it really easy to be a murderer in that context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it also allows you... if you want to wage an illegitimate war in the Middle East to be a murderer on a scale that outpaces anything Tookie Williams may or may not have done.
Well, I am impressed by the cold-blooded murderousness of this administration. Murder of all sorts. I mean, murdering the culture, the people of Louisiana, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Just murdering them straight out. Just killing, literally killing people, but also killing all that culture, all that richness, all that wealth. That which created truly American music. I mean, bam, just knock it out.
Well, slow economic murder that Beth just talked about.
And
cutting food stamp aid, heating aid, Medicaid to poor people.
Can you imagine, they, in order to have their tax break for the rich, they're actually going to cut off food and heating oil and gas for the poor.
Yeah, and in the name of fiscal responsibility. See,
when they run up the debt beyond belief.
See, but that discussion isn't even, that's not even in the framework right now.
Where are those Democrats?
There's a budget hole that we created by giving money to the rich, so it is our fiscal duty, therefore, to screw the poor to make sure everything balances out, because we're fiscally responsible Republicans.
Well, now you're being cynical.
Yes, I am. Let's go to the phones. Paul, you're next.
Good morning.
Morning.
So speaking of being cynical, what makes you guys think that anything is going to change in the House in 2006?
The groundswell of opposition to the administration and to the incredibly corrupt Republican machine, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Gilded Age. That's what.
So were you on a sabbatical in 2000, 2002, and 2004, someplace where you got no news about the stolen elections in this country?
Now, Paul, Joe and I have been talking about this, and our listeners have been talking about this for a long time. I'm talking about the majority of Americans who have now swung around to oppose this administration.
But Paul,
a lot of people have changed their minds over the last few months.
But Paul has a point. They've rigged the election, so it's very hard to change the House.
Yeah, that's
true. The Democrats, the Republicans have really done enormous damage, and the Democrats have allowed it to happen.
That's true.
Well, what about this one? If the Republicans lose the House, then Bush can get impeached.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but if either of you think that they aren't going to pull out all the stops, that the election fraud that we've seen before, that the voter disenfranchisement, and the outright theft, and is anything compared to what we're going to see, it's not going to happen, there's... people need to get involved and quit complaining about the Democrats. It ain't the Democrats, it's the voters that don't do nothing. And it's not just the voters that don't do nothing. It's the people that consider themselves liberals or progressives that won't go out and back a candidate. We got races coming up here in Multnomah County and the city of Portland where there's all kinds of good candidates. Shoot, there's a couple places where I got two or three friends running in the race, and they're all good, but, you know, and they have different good ideas, but nobody will go out and work for them.
Well, let me just tell you this, Paul. You're allowed to talk about candidates. We're not.
Well, no, I understand.
No, I'm just giving you a hint there.
Yeah. Okay, but the name I wanted to throw out for today is Yee. You mentioned him. They're going to interview him on the news. Well, he's going to be speaking at First Unitarian Church tonight at 7 p.m.
Okay,
and I think that's really.
This is the chaplain who was wrongly incarcerated and stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, have a good day.
Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, Paul's right. They've managed to hijack the electoral process. However, it's possible that, opposition to Republican opposition or opposition to the Republicans,
uh-huh.
These candidates can win by a wide enough margin that any tampering that they're able to do might not be enough.
Well, I
may be completely wrong about that.
Well, it might create a crisis where people could, at least it would reveal the falseness of the system, the artful lying. I just want to mention a bunch of stuff because we will take our next call, but I want to just very quickly. I have pushed the Bush step-down agenda, the state of emergency being declared in essence, that the night of Bush's lying speech to the State of the Union, that there be lots of noise for an hour before and all during the speech. Everyone get out on your porch and bang pots and pans. On the Saturday following the speech, big marches. There's going to be one in Washington, D.C., and there should be one in every city in the United States. And that there's lots of good reasons to drive the Bush regime out. That is, there really is reasons for impeachment, serious reasons. I want to again remind people, Baghdad Blues, paintings by John Colburn. You can catch them Wednesday through Friday. That's tomorrow through Friday from 5 to 8 in the evening, and Saturday from 12 to 4, and Sunday 9 to 12, and 6 to 9. And we are talking about the horrendous developments in the Tukey Williams case and the murder of this man, and the chickenness evilness of Arnold, the possible Nazi Schwarzenegger.
Evil Tude.
Yep. Evil Tude.
Evil.
Well, he did want to marry a Kennedy, and now she got him, or he got her.
Yeah.
Or something.
Something.
What is that? Why would you want to marry a Kennedy?
Money.
Money.
He's got plenty of that of his own, huh?
All right. Let's go to let's
who's
go
next?
To Nicole.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I also want to voice my extreme sadness that Schwarzenegger did let the execution of Tukey Williams happen. I think I'm just kind of wondering if maybe the Republicans are like just trying to incite violence. I was half expecting that there would be riots in L.A. because of this, and I was kind of wondering if that's because I remember when there was a demonstration down in L.A. and they actually rolled down tanks for the first time, for in front of a peaceful L.A. demonstration. It seems like they're just kind of itching to use those tanks and those riot gear that they have down
well,
there.
Well, the ministers and the other responsible people have been working very hard not to create a provocation that would allow that. But you never know how people are going to react.
I just think it's awful. If there were more women in the court system, I think the people that would really get the, people who really deserve the death penalty that are child molesters and rapists. But, it's like you say, the death penalty, it sounds nice in theory, but it really, really doesn't work in this society.
I don't think it sounds nice in theory,
and I don't think anyone deserves it.
But I do want to take issue with you on one small point. I think power is the determinant here. I don't believe that there is a genetic difference between men and women once they're in power. I believe that power itself is corrupting, and that you have to have absolute checks and balances and an absolute democracy. I think that women may have a different perspective born out of their experience. But once that experience changes, they can be just as cruel as men. This is my belief, and there's no way to test it. And, we don't need to fight about it. But I worry about that idea, that genetics is destiny.
I don't believe that either. I do believe that there's, there should be more gender representation.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you.
Places of power.
Absolutely.
But as just an aside, I really am more, I'd like to find out more about that ad in New York, who were all the great people that managed to get that ad in New York trying to get, Bush to step down. I'd like to learn more about that, please.
Well, what else can I tell you? It's you can go online at worldcantwait.org.
Okay, great.
And a phone number for those of you who don't use a computer, 1-866-973-4463. I'll repeat that, 866-973-4463. And I would suggest that this ad, word for word, if people want to put up the money, could be printed in the Willamette Week or the Argonian or the Tribune, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
The radio or on television. Thank you, Nicole. I think if I get Nicole's angle right, I think she was trying to imply that if riots arose out of the Tookie Williams execution,
mm-hmm.
that would be to the Republicans' advantage.
Well, it would allow them to cast the African-American community or those involved, whatever their
Violent, lawless.
As violent, lawless
right.
people. So the strategy of having it not have that. But it's a two-edged sword. If, on the other hand, you don't have community reaction, then those in power feel very comfortable doing the stuff that they do. It's a real catch-22.
Oh, for sure. And every time the Republicans have had political success, they've done so by convincing a large number of people to vote against their own economic self-interest.
Right.
And race has probably been the single largest tool in their toolbox.
Well, like all fascists, they cultivate fear.
And these last couple of elections, they've managed to convince people that it was more important to keep gay people from getting married than it is to give away the treasury to rich people.
And that's ironic because African Americans, who are largely fundamentalists in their Christian mm-hmm. belief, have in essence been significant supporters of that position.
Yep.
That is the anti-gay agenda.
Yeah, and the president's faith-based initiative policy has been a way to try and draw that conservative religious minority vote into the GOP fold.
Yeah, these people, of course, these Republicans, they call themselves Republicans. I don't know what they really are. Fascists. They're really engaged. They're engaged in an absolute takeover. This is different than any struggle we've seen between Republicans and Democrats in the past, or to the degree that there's a left, the left and the right in America.
Yeah, this is not your typical oscillation between one party in power versus the other party.
No, I really believe this is a crisis of institutions and a crisis of culture and a crisis of democracy.
And of economics. The meta story here, as we've alluded to many times on the show, is the transfer of power away from the nation state, and in our case, that means the people,
mm-hmm.
to a transnational corporate executive ruling class. That's what this is about.
And it's absolutely the case. We have seen it. We see it over and over again. And it has to be. It has to be confronted. It has to be identified. More importantly, the American people need to be persuaded. You know, I look at Adbusters magazine, the Canadian, I think it's Canadian, kind of anti-commercial.
Brilliant publication.
I want to see ads. This is fine, this Bush step down ad. But I want to see ads everywhere, pasted up, actually in publications, actually on television, that are artful. I think Move On did this mm-hmm. for a while. But I think you need lots and lots. It's going to take millions of billions of dollars to counter this incredible propaganda that's gone on. And a lot of the propaganda is so embedded. You know, it's the propaganda of the Walmart. It's the propaganda of the buy, buy, buy. It's the propaganda of the unnecessary foods. It's the propaganda of so many things.
Of nationalist symbols.
Exactly. And it's so well embedded in the culture that people are, you know, they're trained from birth virtually to accept these images. Yeah. And it's really hard to counter that.
And it's also difficult to get an anti-establishment ad on a major broadcast network that is owned by a major defense contractor.
Isn't that odd?
Who's profiting by an illegitimate war.
You mean like General Electric owning NBC?
NBC, yeah.
As one example?
As one example.
Of many?
Yeah.
How about Fox? Can you imagine Fox running anti-war ads?
No, I cannot.
Somehow Murdoch doesn't seem like the guy to do that with.
No.
No, I think that the struggle is worth doing. I think it's winnable, but, you know, it's close. It's really close.
Yeah, it takes dedicated focus over a long period of time, and that's a hard thing to muster from the American people.
Well,
they're so easily distracted.
And the fact of the matter is most people are struggling. This is not much discussed, but most people are really struggling to make the nut. They don't have the time.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of young people who have, you know, degrees and stuff. Well, they have huge debt from their colleges, from their law schools, even from their higher education, you know, in general. They have to they work so hard, and they've got time. Well, they've got time for their personal lives, and they've got time for their work lives.
Oh, I'm one of them.
Little else. Well, but you put your hours in here.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Which is appreciated, Abe.
Yeah, but hey, at least those queers can't get married.
Oh,
let's
boy,
take another call.
Take another call, quick. Yeah. David,
good morning.
Good morning. My name is Dave. I've been tuning into your program. I'm a former member of the war machine of this country and of the 82nd Airborne.
Okay.
the motto is all the way. Now, I've deployed around the world.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I cited the wrong unit.
Or
the wrong motto.
I thought it's a generic saying of airborne troopers.
Ah, okay. I apologize for that.
I've deployed around the world to install democracies in other countries, yet we fail to have one on our own.
Interesting.
Ironic.
And how, if you resist this power, you will be killed, clear and simple. And that is the policy abroad and here as our own country, as can be seen with Williams.
Listen, we actually run out of time. I'm really glad you called. I hope you'll call us again.
Yes.
I want to chat with you.
All right.
All right. We got to wind up, I think.
We do.
All right.
You know, you're off?
Bush, step down. What? I'm off for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's you. It's you, man.
Just be me.
It's you, man. And I didn't get to do Bad Santa.
No.
No Bad Santa. Oh, it's okay. I think Bad Santa can be laid to rest. We got plenty of Bad Santas in the White House. All right. 2-3-1. Nope. That's it. KBOO. 90.7.
All right.
Keep
see you next week. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Ton message le prend douce, la trajectoire de la foule.